As always, desire your prayers this morning. I really appreciate that song. I feel like it really ties in with the thought I have this morning. So what I wrote on the board says, but what if, followed by some dots. You know, if you think about that song, the lily, do you think the lily, every morning when the sun comes up, the lily's thinking, but what if? What if it doesn't rain? But what if? Well, what if it rains too much? Or do you think the lily just grows in whatever circumstances it's in? From what we know from our side of things in science and biology, plants don't seem to have the reasoning capabilities we do. So I feel fairly confident in stating that the plant probably just grows. This is the circumstances I'm in. It may be dry, it may be hot, it may be wet, it may be rainy, it may be just right. But this is where I'm at, and this is where I'm going to grow. And it doesn't spend a lot of time focusing on, but what if? So I'd like to start off in Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25, starting in verse 14. This is a familiar story we've heard before. It says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway he took his journey." And now if we were to continue reading down through there, we're not going to read it all, we'll see that the man given 5, he went out and gained another 5. The man given 2, he went out and gained another 2, but the last one, he just dug in the ground and put the talent in the ground. And when the Lord returns, he gets the servant that had the 5, and that servant says, I've gained 5 more, and excellent, good job. Gets to the servant that had the 2, and the servant that had 2 gained 2 more, excellent, wonderful job. Gets to the servant that just had the 1, and we have a little different thing going on here. So let's start off there in verse 24. "Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there hast thou that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gathered where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take for therefore the talent from him which and give it to him which hath 10 talents. And unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now, let's look at this gentleman and keep in mind the context of but what if. So this gentleman that got the 1 talent, he buried the talent. We see a little bit of his discussion with the Lord that he didn't want to lose it. He knew there was going to be a reckoning someday. He knew the Lord was going to come back and say, you've had a talent. I gave it to you. I think there was pretty clear instructions as far as what there was the expectations were. The other 2 gentlemen went out and it said they bought and sold. They made gain with their talents. This man, however, I'm afraid of losing it. But what if I lose the talent? But what if? And so he went and buried it. Now, looking at this gentleman, how did he view his Lord? He had a view of his Lord that was different, I think, from the other 2. The other 2, their view of the Lord was, okay, well, he's He wants us to make gain, and we're going to make gain, and it's going to be good if we'll get a reward. Because it sounds like the ones that gain the money, the Lord let them keep it. Did y'all pick that up in the story? Because it said, I hadn't really thought about it before, but when I was reading it, it said, take the talent from the one and give it to him that has 10. He was still, the man with 10 was going to be able to keep it, continue to work with it. This man viewed the Lord, his Lord, as a harsh person. Overbearing. A man who wanted to profit in things that he really had no vested interest in. Meddling in affairs that he really, according to what the servant said, probably shouldn't have been meddling in. Looking to profit where he hadn't, maybe shouldn't be able to expect profit. And then he viewed his Lord as treating people harshly that didn't just fall in line and do what the Lord wanted. And so he feared the punishment more than he valued the reward. And that was his focus. His focus wasn't in, but what if I can double my talent? What if I could triple my talent? His but what if was, but what if I lose it? But what if I don't gain anything? But what if I have nothing to show? What's going to happen then? You know that our world is full of people that's the way they see the Lord. Our Lord Jesus, the God of heaven, they see him as a harsh person, meddling in things that he has no business meddling in, wanting to impact parts of our lives that maybe we feel like he shouldn't have. You know, there's some folks that will follow the Lord out of fear. Not because of the reward. They don't follow the Lord because of heaven. They follow the Lord because they're afraid of hell. They don't follow the Lord because they love him. They follow the Lord because they don't want pain for themselves. And their but what if is looking at the wrong things. And this man, he did what he felt was the bare minimum he had to do to survive. You know, as I've talked to folks in the world, around the world, even amongst the saints, sometimes you'll find people that they want to live for the Lord, but just enough to make it into heaven. Just enough not to go to hell. Their but what if scenarios that they run through their mind aren't what I'm going to call the right but what if questions. They're looking at the wrong ones. You know, if that man, if he was worried about losing the money, what did the Lord tell him? Well, if he'd have just went down and put it in the bank, put it in a savings account, drawn simple interest on it, I at least would have got my money back with interest. You would have made a gain. It was that easy. That's all you had to do to not lose the money. And yet the man got scared of his but what if. So looking at our lives today for the Lord, I'm going to repeat some of the but what ifs that I've heard and probably some of them that I've asked myself. Starting off with the first one. But what if I get called to preach? But what if? Is that a negative thing? It may be scary, but is it really a negative thing? But what if I get called to be a missionary? Is there anything wrong with that? But what if I get called to stand up and speak publicly? What if I'm asked to give up my job and travel for the Lord? What if I get called to speak to complete strangers, people I don't know about the Lord? But what if I get called to suffer persecution? But what if I get called to be a prisoner for my beliefs? What if I get called to die for my beliefs? You know, we can get into the world, let the world get into our minds, and we can start thinking of all of these as bad, negative things. Stephen died for his beliefs, didn't he? When we read that story in the Bible of Stephen and his being stoned, do we look at that as failure on Stephen's part? Or do we key into something at the very end of his life where he looked up and he saw Jesus standing on the right hand of God? Now let's ask the question again. But what if when I die, I see Jesus waiting for me before I'm actually even through the veil? If he's opening the veil before I'm ready to pass? What if you could see that? Would that be an encouraging thing? Does the phrase, "I can't," echo in your mind a lot? Some of the things at work, I worked with people, and we would be on projects, and people would say, "But what if we do this?" And I don't know how many of y'all have that person in the crowd that almost instantly will come back, "Well, but what if this happens?" And you say, "Well, if that happens, then we can do this." "Okay, but what if this other thing happens?" "Well, then we'd have to do this." "Well, now, but what if this?" I've worked with folks that it didn't seem to matter what you put out there. They always could find a what-if scenario for why the project wasn't going to work. Their what-if-ing was always viewed from the negative side. Back to the lily. Does the lily view life positive or negative? Or does it say, I'm supposed to grow. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is what the Lord made me for. This is where the Lord put me. I'm going to grow. So that's what the lily does. I did read the first couple of verses here about these talents because I want us to look at one thing. You know, when the Lord that was going away handed out the talents, he didn't randomly hand talents out to people with no thought to their capabilities. He handed out the talents, it said, to the men for their several ability, in other words, for their individual capabilities. To the man that he gave five to, he was like, "I've watched you before. I've seen the way you work. You can handle the five talents. I'm going to give you five." To the man he gave two, he's like, I know your capabilities. I know your skills. Maybe you're not as capable at some of the business side of things, but you are capable at this part. I'm going to give you these two. And even the man with one, the Lord said, "You know, you can at least go put it in the bank. You may not do much with it, but there's a little thing you can still do. I know your capabilities." Do we think about our lives before God that he's not going to ask us to do things we can't do? God's not going to try to set us up for failure. God's not going to come to you and say, "I need you to do this, but I know you can't do it." Because do you think God wants us to fail and go to hell? Or does God want to save as many people as he can? So why would he ask you to do something you can't do? One of the things I think of sometimes is, you know, have you ever bought something that needs assembly? And, you know, generally there's instruction booklets in there. And the thing that I find interesting is when you read the instruction booklets, just about the very first page will have an instruction on it that says, "Read this before proceeding." Now, how many of y'all know people that don't really read the instruction booklets? They kind of, this is easy to put together. Yep, I think I know how this goes together. And they start putting parts together. And then they get to a point where, okay, now I've got a part and I don't know where it goes. I thought it went this way, but it doesn't go that way. So then they go back to the instruction booklet and they're trying to now follow or find out where in the booklet they're at, and they can't really figure it out. So sometimes they have to go back and then reread the instruction booklet when they should have already read it. I've seen sometimes where people would have something just about completely put together and one last part to put on, and they're griping. They're unhappy. Because they're telling me, the manufacturer made this part wrong. Look, it doesn't work the way it's supposed to work. Okay. Have you looked at the instruction booklet to see if that's the way it's supposed to go in there? Well, no, that's about the only way it can fit. It has to go that way. Well, it's not working that way. Have you looked at the instruction booklet? This literally happened just a few weeks ago with some assembly of a device at work. Well, let's go look at the instruction booklet. Oh, it doesn't go that way. Yep, it goes a different way. Went together easy. Worked just like it was supposed to work. Do you know we can let our own ideas about things build up in us to where we're but what-ifing things that really are easy if we just take the instruction booklet for life and say, what is it I'm supposed to do? How am I supposed to build this? I'd like to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Starting in verse 9. It says, for we are laborers together with God. You are God's husbandry. You are God's building. According to the grace of God which is given unto me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For another foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work will be made manifest. For the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. And the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. And if any man's work abide which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss. But he himself that be saved, yet so as by fire. So I want us to consider this here. So we know the foundation is Christ. And we know everybody's been told that we need to build our lives upon the foundation of Christ. And now it talks about building with gold, silver, stones, wood, hay, and stubble. And it talks about these works of ours being tried with fire. Now, if you heard that you were supposed to build something, and the way that it was going to be tested to see if it would pass the test is it was going to be set on fire, would you build with hay, with wood, or with stubble? Or would you think, that's probably not what I need to build with? Have you ever considered that the original altar that they burnt the sacrifices on in the Old Testament was made of wood, overlaid with brass? You know, sometimes it's not so much that you're building with wood, it's how are you building with the wood? We can look at things and think, well, Lord, you told me to build with wood, but what if? Well, what if the fire gets too hot? That wood's going to catch on fire. Are you following the Lord's instructions? He knows what he's asking you to do. They used that altar and carried it around for ages, 40 years. Actually, a little 40 plus years. Made of wood, constantly being exposed to the fire. And the work stood up. Reading about stubble. Have y'all heard of a substance called cob? It's basically chopped up bits of straw and stuff, and it's mixed in with rock, sand, clay. It's basically a mud mixture with straw in it. Do you know there's a house that they say is over 10,000 years old made of cob? Because when it was built, it was built and maintained and it's held up. And if it's built right, the cob really won't burn. There's people that build houses out of straw hay bales. This has actually been going on for a while. People may not realize it. And you can even build houses out of hay bales today, even in some parts of the United States that meet building code. And we would think that a house made out of bales of hay would just be a nightmare and a fire. But what they found is if you build correctly with it, it actually burns slower than a wooden building. It actually will resist fire better than a wooden building. But the key is, how do you build? I mention these things because of the but what if. But what if the Lord says, I need you to build me a straw bale house? And oh, by the way, I'm going to try it with fire. Does your but what if, but Lord, it's a straw house. It's going to burn slap up as soon as you put the fire to it. If you build it right, it shouldn't. Not if you're following the Lord's directions. When we start looking at what the Lord's asking us to do in our lives, what is our mindset? What do we think about? Do we think about, but when I get to heaven, what's it going to look like? Who all am I going to be able to see? Will I recognize Moses? Will I be able to recognize Isaiah, Elisha, Elijah? Hopefully I'll recognize Jesus. Well, we think about, you know, thinking there what we just read, said the works we tried with fire. And if your works survive, you're going to have a reward in heaven. How would you like to be, and this is just me speaking, the gentleman in heaven without a house? That has to go around and sleep in everybody's guest room because when you were sending things up to heaven, you weren't building them right. And when your works were tried, let's just say you didn't have much of a reward. You've got a lot with a nice pretty fence around it, a little bit of a foundation down, but you didn't really get the building built right. Or, but what if? But what if you get to heaven and it's this beautiful mansion? Just wonderful. Exactly the way you wanted it. Not too big, not too small, with all the little rooms you wanted in it. A place to grow plants, maybe, greenhouse, sunroom. Listening and reading that story of the man with the one talent, does it sound so hard for him to maybe have just had to think of, you know what, all I need to do is earn something on this talent. I'm not a businessman. I don't understand negotiations. Every time I try to negotiate something, I mess it up and I lose money. But if I go put it down in the bank and put it in a savings account, it won't earn much. What do we earn on savings accounts nowadays? 0.5%, 1% maybe? But it's a profit. And the man's Lord told him, that would have been good. I wasn't asking you to take one talent and become a billionaire with it. I was asking you to take one talent and just make a profit, even a small one. What is the Lord looking for in our lives? What does He want us to do? And then I'm going to challenge y'all. What is your but what if to that challenge from the Lord? Are you looking at it as, okay, Lord, that's a challenge. What if you're the guy that's got 5 talents? You're like, okay, the Lord's put a lot on me. I've got to think here. I need to pause and stop and you know, consider that. You know, we don't have record of if the men that made the doubled the amount of talents, we don't have any record if they made that all in one fell swoop. It said the Lord was gone for a long time. Pure supposition on my part, but the man with 5 talents, Let's say he started buying and selling and trading and he's down to 3 talents. How's that going for him? Buys and sells and trades some more and now he's down to 1 talent. I've lost 4 talents. Maybe he bought and sold some more and that talent's gone too. And he's like, I've got to dip into my own money now if I want to get the Lord some money back because I've not done very well. But the Lord's not back yet. I've got time. I can still make this, I can still turn this around. I can still do well and get my reward. So I'm gonna keep working. And he did. And when the Lord came back, I've got 10 talents, Lord. 5 more than what you gave me. He didn't talk about potentially the heart sick nights when he realized that whatever deal he had went south, when he had maybe invested in a crop and a hailstorm came along and knocked it flat, no hope of recovering the money. You know that happens in life, people. But the good Lord wants us to keep working. You know, we may not think about this much, but do you know the disciples were often challenged by Jesus for their lack of faith? And how would you like it if your master, who you're supposed to be following, would tell you, "Oh, ye of little faith. Oh, ye of little faith." You might think, well, after a while, Lord, can you encourage me? Do you remember when the disciples couldn't cast the devil out? There's a story there. I don't remember where it's at. I didn't actually take the time to look the verses up. But the father had brought his child to the disciples. And he said, I'd like you to cast the devil out of my child. And the disciples ran into a problem, didn't they? They couldn't cast the child out, the devil out. And this was something that was happening in public. This was not something happening in the father's house where he'd invite him over and it was a quiet thing. This was, they were out in the public street. The father had come up. It was becoming a big to-do. If you read the story, you're going to find that they probably were embarrassed on multiple fronts. One, the father had come to him and they no doubt expectantly commanded the devil to leave and he didn't leave. Now what? And if you read the story, the crowd started gathering around. And the scribes, potentially some Pharisees in there among them. How do you think they felt? The Lord's given us power over the devils and we're absolutely failing here. We haven't been able to cast him out. The crowd's getting bigger. The scribes and Pharisees are asking questions, challenging us with how we believe. Why isn't it working? And then Jesus walks up on this whole scene. How do you think they felt? Oh, there's the Lord. Oh my goodness, we are so busted at not being able to do what he asked us to do. We are so in trouble. We have made him look so bad. They had. I mean, that's the fact of the situation. But what did Jesus do? He came up, talked to the father, what's going on here? What's going on? Cast the devil out. And it says that the disciples, if you read there in Mark chapter 9, verses 28-29, it says, when he was come into the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could not we cast him out? And he said unto them, this kind can come forth by nothing but by prayer and fasting. Now, I want us to pause and think a minute. When Jesus walked up and found out what was going on, did he tell the father, okay, hold on a minute, can you bring the child back in a day or two? I need to go pray and fast. He didn't do that, did he? What I think this is showing is that there was an implied activity that should have been being done on the disciples' part that was not. If they would have been fasting and praying enough prior to, they might have been able to handle the situation that came up. Jesus, we have record, he seemed to pray and fast and spent all night at places, seemed to pray just about everywhere he went. He focused on staying current with his prayer life. Now, Jesus' disciples, they had been taught how to pray. They had asked Jesus to teach them how to pray. They recognized the importance. They went as far as saying, Lord, we teach us to pray. We want to know the right way to do this. In Corinthians, it talked about building upon the foundation. Do you think prayer and fasting is foundational to being a Christian? Sometimes when we get into the situations, no doubt those disciples were starting to ask questions in their own minds, but what if we had done this? Maybe we should have tried that. Because they were thinking about it. That's why they asked Jesus when they got back to the house, Master, what did we do wrong? They were what-if-ing things. And Jesus just simply said, it's the basics. It's the, when I use this term, I'm not necessarily going to mean that it's literally easy, but it's not difficult. It's the easy stuff. Pray and fast. Get close to the Lord. Stay close to the Lord. Settle yourself on the rock. Don't neglect it. Over in Proverbs, we have a verse, Proverbs 24:16. It says, For a just man falleth 7 times and riseth up again, but the wicked shall fall into mischief. One of the things that I would challenge us on this, the man with the 1 talent, he was only focused on what would happen bad. He was not willing to take the risk. He didn't want the risk. This was, I'm going to go the absolutely safe route, and that's it. But in Proverbs it says a just man. Now if you look up that word just, do you know it can also be interpreted righteous? It says a just man, though he never falls, though he's always successful, though he never struggles in life, is that what it says? Or it says, for a just man falleth 7 times. Not just once, not twice, not 3, not 4, not 5, not 6, but 7 times, and he does what? Gets up. Trying it again. Now, if somebody came in that back door and started walking up the aisle, and they fell 7 times before they got to the end of the aisle, how many of y'all would be trying to help them into a chair and tell them they need to sit down and regain their balance? That's our human nature. You all right? You're falling a lot. And what would you do if that person, but I'm almost where I want to go? Because I'm trying to get to the altar. Would you stand in their way? Or would you admire them for being willing to maybe take an 8th, a 9th fall just to get there? Because you know, the Lord oftentimes, what he's looking from us is the finish of the race. This is not a race about who gets there first. We're not competing with each other. You're competing with yourself, with your own mind. That's where you're competing at. Brother Marty, I think, made a comment one time about his mind was one of the biggest battlegrounds for the devil, where he fought the most. What was going on up here? Why? But what if? But what if? But what if? But what if you get up in the morning and the Lord's called you home to glory? Is dying such a bad thing? The process, yes. Folks, I am not going to tell you that I would relish going through the actual process of dying. But the other side? The other side? I want to get there. And there's only one way to get there. You just have to Say, Lord, help me to get there. What else in our lives do we sometimes look at with the wrong but what if view? We look at negatively instead of, but what if? So, but what if the Lord calls you to preach? Okay. Well, what if you start helping souls to find Jesus? Is that worth the fear of getting up in front of people? But what if you're called to be a missionary? But what if you're the first person to bring the gospel of Christ to people? Wouldn't that be something? There's things that we look at, but what if the Lord calls me to speak to a random stranger? What if the Lockharts. But what if I'm called to go to jail for his cause? You know, we can get fearful of that. But we have heard that Brother Allen, my understanding is, has been able to participate in some of the church services they have there in the prison, been able to share and talk to some of those men. Do you know Paul, if I read the history right, spent like the last 10 years of his life in prison? That's where he preached from? That was where the Lord put him to end his ministry? Was it Paul and Silas in prison? Heads down? Oh, but what if we'd have done something different? We'd have been free. Oh, but what if we'd have just maybe tried to pull that man aside and spoke quietly to him instead of out in public? No, they were like, Lord, we are being counted worthy to share in your suffering. But what if we'd have got more people stirred up? How much more people would know about the Lord today? But what if? How many people could we have had saved? And then maybe when we get out, there'd be an even bigger congregation to go to once we get out of jail. There'll be more believers. Do you know one thing that it struck me? We sometimes spend more time fearing the results and not realizing that we should actually fear the failure of trying the most. If you read the Bible, and I can't say that necessarily I have it all memorized, but I can't find very many instances. In fact, I can't think of a one where a person honestly trying to follow the Lord was condemned and cast out for it. If the heart was honest, the Lord was working with them. A smoking flax, he won't quench. A bruised reed, he won't break. We just read there in Corinthians that if you're building works on the foundation of Christ, meaning you're trying to build in the church, your work will be tried with fire. And it may get destroyed, but you will be saved as if by fire. Because he's looking at your heart. The but what if we need to think about is, but what if I don't try at all? What will the Lord think then? Not the but what if I fail. Because if you fall, what does the Lord say? I've got grace. I've got strength. I like it when you're weak because you call on me. Do you know that's the Lord's view of things? When you can't do something and you turn to me, that warms his heart. That's what he actually desires from us. Not our own self-sufficiency, but okay, Lord, I'm at a wit's end. What if this man with one talent, when he was handed the talent, would have said, Lord, I don't know what to do with this. I'm not a businessman. I've never been one. Can you at least give me a starting point, something that I can do so that I don't mishandle your talent? Now, which one of you, if you were giving money out to people to invest, would tell a person that asked you that, no, you figure it out on your own? Because if you're giving a person something to invest, you're looking for a gain. Why would you ignore a plea for help in that situation? The God we have today will not ignore your plea for help. But you have to try. If you're not building, there's no works to be tried. If there's no works to be tried, there will be no fire to save you. Because you didn't build on the foundation. I would challenge us all today. Sometimes it helps to think like the lily of the valley. Lord, you planted me where I'm at. You're asking me to grow here. I'm going to try not to worry about the weather, because it may be hot tomorrow, it may be cold tomorrow, it may be freezing. But as long as it's capable for me to grow, Lord, I'm going to try to grow. Y'all pray for me.